call 313-845-6430 or check out the pre-education program guide at hfcc.edu/programs.
If you want to change the world, then you have to change yourself. One of the best places in the Metro Detroit area to improve your life is Henry Ford Community College. Henry Ford Community College offers dozens of degree and certificate programs, plus the opportunity to network with your peers and potential employers. Taking classes at Henry Ford Community College gives you the freedom to take your own career path and opens up an infinite number of career possibilities. Additionally, day and evening classes allow you the flexibility of building a schedule tailored to your busy lifestyle. So change the world, change yourself at Henry Ford Community College. For more information on admittance and financial aid and class schedules, call the Henry Ford Community College toll-free number at 1-800-585-HFCC. Again, that's 1-800-585-HFCC.
Hey, it's Brian from the Verve Pipe, and you're listening to WHFR Dearborn.
Format presented on Tuesday from 1 until 2 p.m. Making waves from the Henry Ford Community College radio station on 89.3 from Dearborn, Michigan. This show is pre-recorded and the opinions expressed in the show are not necessarily those of Henry Ford Community College, its staff, personnel, or students. And now, here is Impact. This is Betty Daniels, and I have with me Bill Sechrist, who, and give me your exact title for the school, Bill.
Well, I'm the director of the Religious Studies Program
at
the Henry Ford Community.
Okay, all right. And we are welcoming you to the Impact Show, and I invited Bill to be a part of the show because we just had a Building Bridges Conference here at Henry Ford Community College, and that's been going on for how long now, Bill?
Well, this was the fourth year in a row that we've had a conference to bring people together to talk about various religious cultures.
Okay. All right. Now, I did attend parts of it, so we're going to kind of, I'm going to be hopscotching around because there was so much that was addressed there. There was the interaction was just really dynamic, and it's kind of hard trying to fit into 1 hour all the different things that were accomplished. But I talked to two of the keynote speakers, and one was the rabbi. What was her name again?
Dorit Ehud.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And she is from where?
She's a native Detroiter.
Okay. I thought I read that in her bio, and she's now in Bay City, or?
Well, she served in, she worked in Bay City. She's been a teacher in the past, and then she became a rabbi. She calls herself a rabbi without borders.
So all right.
She's conversant in the various different schools of Judaism, religious Judaism.
All right, all right. And then Mr. Dubois, he is?
Robert Dubois. He's a retired Navy SEAL who does a lot of work with the Department of Defense in terms of training our special forces mm-hmm. in how to protect themselves and secure themselves against enemy operations.
So all right, okay. Expert. And then there were a couple of who were the other keynote speakers?
Well, Imam Hassan Kazvini.
Okay.
From the what do we call it? The American Institute The Islamic Center of America. There.
All right. All right. Okay. I had an opportunity to talk to Mr. Dubois and the rabbi, mm-hmm. and also got a chance to talk to one of the, I believe he's one of the workshop speakers, and I'm not going to, well, I'll try to pan his name with the break. I'll try to get that together, too. Mm-hmm. And that was the part that impressed me so much about the conference was the diversity of inputs, different insights, and different perspectives. That's the word I was looking for. Now, when how would this conference compare to the, you know, I know you started it out with, you know, about 4 years ago. So how has it evolved during the 4 years that you've been putting this on?
Exactly. Good question. We began when we were approached by another organization, a nonprofit organization called the Common Bond Institute.
Okay.
And they were looking for a location here in the Detroit area where they could bring a conference to, they called their conference Religion, Conflict, and Peace.
Mm-hmm.
And they wanted to explore various ways that religion leads to conflicts as well as to the reconciliation of conflicts.
Okay.
And so they brought the idea to us, and we thought that sounds like a wonderful opportunity for our college to join them in mm-hmm. sponsoring such an international conference.
Mm-hmm.
It did have an international flavor, and the Common Bond Institute ran something like 4 or 5 conferences in the course of every year, traveling around the world, all the way from California to Toronto to Jordan to Israel.
Okay, that explains some of the research I did, because I saw building bridges and I saw different locations, and that was going to be my next question. Were they all affiliated together, or are they kind of like a collaborative, or are they all under the same umbrella?
Well, in the past 3 years, or the past 4 years, actually, until this year, we always did it in conjunction with Common Bond Institute,
okay.
So we always had this international flavor, but it was less localized and
okay.
less centered on our own college campus,
okay.
and we felt that the mission of Common Bond was not in perfect alignment with what we needed and wished to
okay.
pursue, which
All
is
right.
Local. We
All
wanted
right.
to get everybody in Detroit
mm-hmm.
involved in this conference.
Okay. Now, when, like I said, when I talked with the rabbi and Mr. Dubois, one of the things that came out in that conversation was the fact that the Metro Detroit Dearborn area is like a microcosm of the world, or quite close to it. And it was interesting. They also attended a jazz benefit with Dr. Tatum, and he made the same comment that I think a lot of people think of Detroit as being predominantly African-American, but what he brought out was the fact that the townships around are very diverse,
mm-hmm.
okay?
Mm-hmm.
And Dearborn itself has a diversity, too, and how do you feel about that?
Well, yeah, greater metropolitan Detroit is a microcosm of our larger world.
Mm-hmm.
Right here at Henry Ford Community College, we have one of the most diverse student bodies
mm-hmm.
And, you know, colleges in general
mm-hmm.
that you can find anywhere in the world.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a perfect location for us to bring people together across the boundaries of culture, religion, age, gender,
All right.
race, what have you.
All right. All
this
right.
is just a great experiment in creating American culture.
All right. When the theme of this particular conference was, does each conference have a different theme or a focal point? And what, if so, what was it for this one?
Well, building bridges of understanding.
Okay.
We wanted to take the emphasis off of the conflict, which was the 3 years prior to this year.
Mm-hmm.
It was religion, conflict, and peace.
Mm-hmm.
And we said, no, we're just going to concentrate on our area.
Mm-hmm.
We want people, whether they be of Jewish background, Christian
mm-hmm.
background, Islamic background,
mm-hmm.
Buddhist, Hindu,
mm-hmm.
no religion whatsoever.
Okay.
We're all here sharing the same place.
Okay.
We need to find out more about each other. We need to get everybody in the same room, eat together, talk together, be together, and then we can become friends.
All right.
And work cooperatively on our
that,
common.
I heard that theme continuously, and it was presented in different ways, okay? The participant of this conference, how did you come about getting the variety that you had? How did you go about selecting them and getting them to come on board?
Well, we had some heroes from
mm-hmm.
the college here.
Okay.
Dr. Nancy Nelson, who's
mm-hmm.
a professor of English, Nancy Owen Nelson,
okay.
professor of English, retired a few years ago, and she's come back to the campus full of verve and moxie.
Okay.
And so she jumped right into a leadership position, as did Dr. Jeannie O'Connor, who's
okay.
our director of service learning as
okay.
well as a professor of religious studies.
All right.
So those two women together with Adnan Salhi from our English division and myself, and Dr. Lauren Scribner, who's also a religious studies professor. So there was a core group of us, maybe five or six, who all had a common passion for bringing people together. They established a program committee.
And
they pooled their experience, their knowledge, their expertise, and reached out actually across the country to bring in some speakers who could address the issues of how do we build community out of so many disparate, you know, subcultures.
Okay. If you were wanting to kind of like summarize the distinction that the keynote speakers brought to the conferences, could you kind of like give us an overview if you wanted to, would you be able to do that?
Yeah, I think most of the keynote speakers, well, all of the keynote speakers were passionate adherents to their own particular religious background. Imam Kazvini is an internationally recognized spokesman on behalf of the Islamic faith, well respected by Muslims and non-Muslims alike. He has, you know, spoken with our presidents in the past several years of crisis, and he's introduced the 108th session of Congress in Washington, D.C. He's been featured on all the major you know, networks in terms of where's a Muslim when we need to ask a question. So and plus he's right around the corner. He's on Ford Road right across the street from us. He's a friend of the college and eloquent spokesman. He's all about promoting a peaceful appreciation of Islam for non-Muslims and of other religions for Muslims. So he's a real bridge builder and a peacemaker.
All right. And how was his distinct from Mr. Dubois?
Well, Dubois is a warrior. You know, he's a man who was trained to get out there and Navy SEAL. He's a tough guy.
When I was looking at the bio, I said Navy SEAL. So how did he get from Navy SEAL to discussing, you know, trying to promote peace? Although when you listen to him, you can hear it, but it was just quite, I would want to say incongruent, but it didn't come across that way when he spoke.
So. No, his book is Powerful Peace. He wrote a book about if we want to have peace, we need to get intimate with our hatred. We have to acknowledge the fact that there is hatred in the world. There is hatred in our hearts. Recognize it, understand it, deal with it, and translate it into that which we need to have going forward to make a world that our children can thrive in.
And what I heard the last 20 minutes of his presentation, and one thing that impressed me was that he, yes, it was his gut feelings and things, but you could see that he had researched other people to support his premise, you know, and not only wasn't so much to support his premise, but gave you a perspective in a way to, you know, look at and view the, I think he said soft power, hard power, those kind of things, because he referred to a couple of Harvard researchers who had gone into this study of power and soft power and that type of thing, and then he quoted Martin Luther King, he quoted Gandhi, he quoted, you know, it was just a, so you could see that it wasn't just a happenstance type of thing, and I don't think, I know not that I think you would bring anyone who took that, but that's what came across to me. It was really impressive about him. Then I looked at it and I said, Navy SEAL. Okay.
Well, you know, he's been on the wrong end of the bullet and the bayonet, so he knows war and he knows conflict, and he actually travels the world in consultation with people from many different nations, advising how, you know, in this age of troubles, you know, where all kinds of hate groups pop up here and there and do absurd actions. They're doing it for a reason. This thing that happened yesterday or the day before in Boston.
Yes.
For whoever did it, they had a reason.
Yes.
So his point, Robert Dubois' message is you have to know when somebody needs to be stopped to avoid carnage and heartache. If you could kill one person to stop them from massacring 1,000 innocents, so let it be. But the best way to defuse the tensions and the terror that is afflicting our world today is through building up what we're doing, bridges of understanding.
Yes, he was quoting from his book. He said that the greatest thing, and I'm paraphrasing it, that a person can do for themselves is to train themselves individually and not take on, just let somebody be a dumping, let your mind and emotions be a dumping ground for training and things like that. Mm-hmm. The rabbi, she went on to say reframing. That was the part I heard from her, is that we have to reframe our learning process with the family and that type of thing. Was that the same impression that you got?
Yes, Rabbi Dorit Edith, she too was involved in establishing a peaceful understanding amongst our different peoples. Mm-hmm. Let me just say one thing, getting back to Robert Dubois.
Okay.
One of the things that I enjoyed about his talk is he said we could actually we could give all of these poor disaffected terrorists, and he's speaking of people in Afghanistan and Iraq who mm-hmm. have no jobs, have no money, have no way to support their families, mm-hmm. and their destitution, their economic poverty forces them sometimes to do things just to make a living. Mm-hmm. Like you can get $150 for planting an improvised explosive device out there on the road somewhere. Mm-hmm. He said, what we need to be doing is just make deals with, start offering money to all of these unemployed people and training. So he's all about retooling our humanity through generosity, mm-hmm. training, working together, turn these people who become our enemies into our friends by mm-hmm. bringing them into our world, mm-hmm. into our what we might call prosperity and right. our education.
Right, right,
and
right.
I think Rabbi Dorit Edith is doing the same thing. She recognizes the tremendous privilege that yeah. she has as an American citizen, a mm-hmm. well-educated American citizen, mm-hmm. and she is pretty much dedicating her life to rebuilding Detroit.
Okay. We're going to take a break for a minute, and then I will come back and we'll pick up the discussion. I want to discuss how this is going to impact our the youth, the another generation. I'll let you know about that. Okay, hold on.
I'm Emmanuel.
I'm 17 years of age and I live in Australia, originally from Iraq.
How old are you?
Well, actually, I'm not exactly sure. When I was originally found in Iraq in an orphanage, my mum found me. I was born with no birth certificate, no passport, nothing.
My story is that I was born in the middle of a war zone. My brother and I, we were found by the nuns in a box in a park, in a shoebox. They brought me to the orphanage. We'd hear shots, noises that we didn't understand. It was like looking at an angel when Mum Moira Kelly walked through the orphanage door. She brought us both to Australia for surgery originally. And then Mum fell in love with both of us. My hero would have to be my mother. She worked very, very hard, extremely hard, to change my life hugely. Some people say I was a man without an identity, but with my mother and with my brother, I believe that I can do this,
Wow, good on you, man.
Thank you.
Good on you, man.
So what are you going to sing?
I'm going to sing Imagine by John Lennon.
Beautiful. Oh. Good luck, mate.
Thank you.
Imagine there's no heaven. It's easy if you try. No hell below us. Above us, only sky. Imagine all the people living for today. There's
no countries. It isn't hard to do. Nothing to live or die for. And no religion to. Imagine all the people living life in peace. You may say I'm a dreamer, but I'm not the only one.
Wow, man.
I hope someday you'll join us, and the world will be as one.
This is Sean Lewis, and you're listening to Impact on 89.3 WHFR Dearborn.
Welcome back to Impact, and we're going to hear the interviews with Rabbi Dorit Idut, a keynote speaker, and J. Robert Dubois, also a keynote speaker. And then following that, we're going to hear from one of the workshop leaders, Mr. Abbas Awatan, who is from the Iraqi Unity for Peace and Love in the United States. And here first now is Rabbi Dorit Idut and J. Robert Dubois.
Harvard University of smart power.
Yes.
Balancing soft power of attraction, hard power of,
yes,
of coercion.
Yes.
My whole purpose is to bring that to a ground truth, a usable way. Call it actionable in the military. And give folks a chance to be able to develop the concepts of balancing approaches, especially,
yes,
with humility, accountability, transparency.
Yes.
All the best things we can do for ourselves, as Imam talked about with the jihad, saying it's training, a person is training himself, not going out and massacring innocents necessarily. And I appreciate also that what Muhammad said about the fact that there is such thing as a jihad,
right,
in the national,
yes,
overall scheme of things. It does involve the war plans.
Yes. Well, I think it can all be reframed and reformulated, and so much of, you know, even what our military is learning. I was just in California, and my sister lives next door to some GIs that are coming back from 5 tours in Afghanistan and talking about how, you know, they had to help the Afghani people there. And there, you know, the media really makes us, as well as some of the training that happens, that we tend to think of people as the other, and, you know, and putting these walls up, and, you know, we can break those down. It takes something to do that. But absolutely, you know, we need to really talk much more together and figure out different ways to resolve conflicts peacefully. And it starts with listening. I feel it starts really with listening and then reflecting or recreating what the other person has said, or, you know, so that then you really get it. You really get what the other
You get where they're wrong.
Yes.
Many times. And I mean that with the most loving, judgmental sound.
Yeah.
We're all
they're
wrong.
Missing something.
We're all wrong.
Yeah,
I'm wrong about a great deal of stuff.
I have a question. Your frame of reference, you're from where? What are you from?
This is me. I'm the author of Powerful Peace.
Okay. All
Lessons
right.
on Peace.
All right. Okay.
I'll be speaking tomorrow morning.
Very good. Very good. All right. And so, how would you say that your perspective distinguishes from her perspective? In what way?
Only our backgrounds. I mean, you've never carried an M4 in front of people, right? And I've never led a temple celebration.
Okay.
But the fundamental truth of seeing humanity as the stakeholder and understanding this concept of the other, which is right there in the front of the book. We talk about the others, and then I talk about transparency and accountability. The key I've come up with is it has to be a practical self. I can't tell GIs or Muslim friends or women or gay lesbian groups or any of these people that are from different segments of society, I can't tell them it's good for you to make peace, to do conflict resolution or prevention wherever you can, because it feels good or because it's nice to do, because nobody gives two hoots about nice to do. They don't give anything. They don't give two hoots about altruism. Now, most of us, I believe, as divine creations, are motivated by altruism, but that gets lost in the shuffle of daily life. And so we say, well, let Mother Teresa do the altruism thing. What's in it for me? And so I say, this is in it for you. It's pragmatic to be able to make your environment safer and better for yourself and your children.
Okay.
That's the selling point. I try to bring it back to the conversation.
Okay, and when your perspective is more of what?
Well, I would say that peace starts in the home.
All right.
And the relationship between one-on-one.
Okay.
I think that we all have the balancing of the looking at each other as, you know, loving your fellow man, but also, yes, recognizing that there are differences, and we can live with those differences.
My question is, I hear, you know, the two different perspectives. Are you trying to approach this from, say, a person's faith, a religious faith, or is this broadening out to other groups? You know, just besides your two perspectives, are bringing others, because sometimes that, you know, whatever organization or group or whatever support is, which is distinct but has nothing to do with him, how does that involve in what you're trying to do? If you're trying to bring another group, say, all right, I'm a Baptist, okay, and I'm not really from your country or from wherever, what kind of input do you think someone from that perspective would have?
I think that we need to look at every different faith and ethnic tradition, cultural tradition, and hear what they have to say and see where the similarities and the differences are, and come to some kind of a consensus.
Okay. All right.
We have to find a value in those differences, wherever possible, and sometimes a difference is bad, but usually a difference is not bad. For example, if I can get graphic, how about raping children?
Okay.
What if that were a difference between another society and mine? I would say no, unacceptable. But take the vast majority of innocuous differences, like wearing white robes for men.
Okay.
A lot of American men have a problem with that. They say men don't wear dresses. And I explain that as one of the silliest examples of all. When I do events, I talk about the fact that that's a very practical garb for that man in that environment, because it's 140 degrees in the sun, and it keeps him in his own little cool air-conditioned tent, if you will. So it's not it has nothing to do with the different being bad, and everything to do with
common sense. Is that really the question about the garb? Is the dress really the issue?
The assumption is that different is bad.
Somebody up here said we're not talking about race, but we need to,
and I do in here.
Okay.
We have to find ways to respect other people, and we have to find ourselves. If you have to start with a pragmatic perspective, that this is in my best interest not to cloud my waters that I'm walking in daily by being antagonistic to people who don't necessarily have any antagonism deserved from me.
Okay.
You know, back to the jihadi, you know, somebody like says there's a threat to us right now, we have to take some action immediately.
Okay.
Or people will be hurt very badly. But all too often we lean on the hard power, the force, or the coercion before we are understanding. We're not seeking first to be understanding, as Stephen Covey talked about, which he got from St. Francis.
Okay.
Which says, let me be understanding
before I try to be understood. Okay. Here in the United States, we're having this building bridges. How would we more or less have some kind of impact outside of this room, whatever?
Well, because here in Detroit, we are a microcosm of the world, and especially between the Jewish and the Muslim communities that are directly connected to things going on in the Middle East, and we are all the time exchanging information. We have families there, and so that's why I feel that we can have a great impact if we can show here that Jews, Christians, Muslims, all groups can get along together and do things together peacefully in the United States, and they can see that in TV and YouTube and whatever.
Okay.
That will impact them in the Middle East.
I might just say, we had the first Religion, Conflict, and Peace Conference here 4 years ago, And the next year, I got a sabbatical leave.
I remember.
Traveled to Lebanon and Syria and Jordan and Egypt and Palestine and Israel. And when I was finished with that, you know, I said, I got to get back to the Motor City where we could sit down calmly without having this barbed wire between us, without all the guards and checkpoints, and sit down and get do a lot more of what you guys have been doing. And that's kind of what's kept this ball. I mean, why we just keep on rolling is because right here in Detroit, we have the freedom, we have the opportunity, and I don't know whether we all realize that we have the mandate. You know,
it's almost like this is a pilot.
Olam Tikkun. Olam Tikkun, it means it is the duty of every human being to repair the world.
Okay.
And it's not for us to finish the job, but neither may we desist from it. That's a commandment, an ancient teaching of Judaism that I picked up over there in the Holy Land. Miriam Gould.
Yes.
Okay. And her husband David said, and you don't have to finish the job, but you cannot desist, you know?
Okay.
And just keep on trucking.
Just keep on trucking, dude.
After this particular
by the news, the Arabic newspaper.
Okay.
Yeah, and that's just...
Now, how did you come about knowing about this particular conference? How did they contact you?
For the conference, actually, it's by the news, the Arabic newspaper.
Okay.
Yeah, and that's just some of my other friends, you know. So from the American Jewish Committee too.
Okay.
So, and I came here, you know, to share and this conference, because this be a very wonderful, you know, time for this conference, you know, to have the people from different kind of religions.
And okay.
So to put the people together and to share together and to live together and to respect each other.
Okay.
And to become close for each other.
Okay.
And to visit each other. For example, like, you know, between, we say now, you know, between the Jewish or between the Muslim. So there is a lot of people, you know, they do they say, you know, for example, there is dispute. Dispute, you know, between the Muslim and between the Jew Israel, you know, between the Middle East, you know. And there is a lot of people looking for the solution or settlement to this and trade, you know. Any kind of, for example, if there is some people have bad idea, for example, from the Muslim people to the Jewish people.
Right.
But I, you know, when I came to the close of the Jewish people, they very great people. They are very open people, honest people. You trust them, you know. They have very, they have culture, they have history in the earth. And also, if we need to talk about the religion, you know, because when hope is here, you know, about the religions. So if we need to talk about the religion, the first religion for the Jewish. This coming from God, not from me or from you.
Okay.
And no one saying, you know, this. No, 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 no. They not to be the first religion. This one by the history. And we have, you know, they have book and Bible. And then we, of a Jewish, we respect that too, you know.
Okay.
I mean, so this be meaning not shame if I am to learn from the Jewish people some new word or from some good idea. Or from advise me about something, how we to live together, how we work together.
What is this dispute? What is it keeping us from? What is, I mean, the dispute, how is it dividing?
Okay, the dispute now, they see, in Middle East, if we know, now we here in the United States, especially now here in the Michigan too, you know, because we have different communities, the Arabic community, I'm from the Iraqi community too, and the Jewish community. So we good with, we don't have, you know, that much, you know, about the dispute, you know. But we talked about the Middle East.
Okay.
There there is a lot of people, you know, they listen to the government or to the regime, uh-huh. you know, or to the some other people, the terrorism people, for uh-huh. example, sheikh, or, you know, they give lecture, they give bad idea about, you know, the Jewish or about this, some other people, and we not accept that. Okay. We need to give good idea. Okay. We need to listen for the good thing.
Okay.
You know, how to put us together and to live together.
Okay, together means what to you? What is it?
Mean this is the life.
Okay.
This is the life want from us. We as human beings. Uh-huh. We human beings. Uh-huh. So you accept me. See, now we're here in the United States. We should be to learn from the United States too.
Okay.
They accept all the colors.
Okay.
So when you go to, for example, apply for a job, uh-huh. they not say you black or white, you American, or you from Middle East. Uh-huh. No. They say okay. about your education.
Okay.
What you have education.
Okay.
And then come. This okay. your position ready for you.
Okay.
And
okay.
how you active and how you it is good how you handle in your position.
Okay.
So this one's good.
Okay.
You know, system.
All right.
For all of the human beings.
Okay.
And we should be to learn from this system.
Okay.
We should be to learn from the good Muslim people.
Uh-huh.
We should be to learn from the our Jewish
okay.
people. We should be to learn also from the Christian people
uh-huh.
too.
Okay.
It is, you know, if we need to talk about the religions and the other religions too,
uh-huh.
you know, and if we need to talk as human beings want to from us, you know, to
okay.
be, you know, go to the conference together, go to the festival together,
uh-huh.
go to the holiday. We have to share with that too.
Uh-huh.
It is very important.
Okay.
We
okay.
have to visit.
Okay.
We have to work on the new generation.
Okay.
This one very important for us to work for the new generation and to give them, you know, the wonderful education.
What are the
education.
Challenges for the new generation, do you think?
The challenge, actually, you have to start with the speech of peace.
Okay.
And this one, if we need to talk about 3 days, we're not, you know,
know
or more
I
than
know,
that,
I
too.
Know,
you know,
I know,
what I mean?
I know.
So this one take time from
okay.
us. But this one, the small notes,
okay.
but look like, you know, like there is 2 pages or more.
I
than
know,
that.
I understand.
But, yeah.
If you.
Whatever
were,
you need to
right,
add,
right.
add, you
I'm
know.
Gonna be, like I said, I'm going to try to call, contact you also again so I can, you know, get some more feelers and
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah.
But what I'm observing, because I'm not Jewish or a Muslim, and to me is that it's like it's black and white.
Yes.
But and then is there a similarity in the kind of struggle of black and white as to Jews and Muslim, or is it more fundamental? Is there the distinction between those kinds?
See, now you heard.
Okay.
The other student,
uh-huh.
his question,
uh-huh.
he did ask a question about the Palestinians
uh-huh. Uh-huh.
and between the problem
okay.
this, between the Palestinians and between the country, between the city of the Palestine and
yes.
the country of
right.
Israel.
Right.
So this one's after he finished, so I was sharing also,
uh-huh.
I said I have some other friend.
Okay.
He's from Iraq and Jewish.
Okay.
Who kicked out
okay.
since 1948 from the old
okay.
government regimes,
okay.
you know, and there is more than 100,000 people all
uh-huh.
from our public, Iraq
right.
and Jewish.
Right.
They kicked out. They lost their properties.
Okay.
They lost the money. They lost their business.
Uh-huh.
They lost everything. They lost the citizen.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Okay.
So it is good. For us, you know, to looking for two sides, not one side.
Okay.
You know,
okay.
If there is some problem in the past, we say this is the problem, put circle on this problem,
uh-huh.
and how we fix this problem. We don't want to be staying in this circle, you know, forever.
Okay. All right. Okay.
No. We have to stop this circle.
Okay.
Put the circle here, and we have to put the new strategy plan
uh-huh.
or estimate
okay.
to make us how we live together, how we respect each other, how I give you your right back.
Okay.
If, for example, the Jewish, Iraqi Jews, they lost their money and the property and the citizens from the Iraq, we have to remind them, for example, if I sit with them and to remind them, we with you, and we ask for you.
Okay.
So, this is the peace.
Okay.
This is the good relationship.
I'm going to have to be calling.
All right, now we're coming back with Impact, and this is Betty Daniels, one of the co-hosts of Impact. And we were discussing the Building Bridges Conference that was held here at Henry Ford Community College, the 4th, 5th, and 6th. Was that the date?
It's the 5th and 6th. 5th
and 6th.
Friday and Saturday of April.
Right, okay. And we were discussing about the diversity and the different impacts that the different conflicts have on people. And just before we went to the break, Bill was talking about how Mr. Dubois was talking about getting and retraining or helping the people out in these areas who maybe are not as invested in the conflict as they are in their day-to-day survival. Okay. Could you elaborate a little bit more? Because the reason where I'm coming from, I'm kind of like to tell you what happened, is that during the conference, as I was interacting with different participants, it came up that those who had relocated from those areas had lost their businesses, lost their homes, and a different thing. So a part of trying to reconcile or process these diversities, there were still some individual personal issues that they had to get past or get around. And did that also come up? I think that's about what you were suggesting when you were discussing about helping the people out and where they are.
Well, I'll tell you, that's really, we have 30,000 Iraqis, refugees from the wars that began in the early 90s with American involvement. 30,000 living in Detroit, and several of them, many, many of them on our campus now. Mm-hmm. One gentleman named Hossam connected with Robert Dubois.
Mm-hmm.
He was from Baghdad.
Right.
Served in the Baghdad Army. Was conscripted into the army back in the days of, back in the old days.
Right.
And then he later found himself employed by the United States Army, working as a translator and helping our forces in Iraq understand the local culture and to interface with the local culture. This gentleman has been wounded 4 times. He showed me his wounds.
Mm.
His mother.
Mm-hmm.
Was killed, assassinated, when it was discovered that he was working with the United States.
Right.
He was just in New York City in the last few days where the CIA was trying to get him to come back and go over and serve in Afghanistan.
Mm-hmm.
He just told them politely that he's trying to pursue his college education. He's 25 years old.
Mm-hmm.
So here is a kid sitting in my classroom, quiet, shy, English as a second, third language. You would never know what he has been through. And there he is sitting next to 17-year-olds, 16-year-olds from our high school, you know, with their baseball caps on backwards, all bubbly and talking about what kind of cars they're driving. And here's this gentleman who's just come from hell.
Right.
And so he connected immediately with Robert Dubois, and the two of them just huddled in the corner for an hour and became close and personal, you know, friends and contacts, supporting one another, knowing what needs to be done. So to get back to your question, this Henry Ford Community College is actually in the eye of the hurricane. We have so many people from Syria, from Lebanon, from Iraq, from Egypt, from, you know, Yemen, from all of these places in the world where people are at each other's throats, mostly for political and economic reasons, but these reasons, some of them go back for centuries. Here in the United States of America, here in Dearborn, Michigan, at Henry Ford Community College, we have the freedom.
Mm-hmm.
We have the opportunity. We have acres and acres of lighted free parking.
Right.
Good security. It's a nice, safe, well-lighted place where we're able to come together, talk to each other, understand each other, you know, feel for one another, and even cry for each other and laugh with each other. And that's exactly what this is all about, you know, giving people like Hossam and my student Sarah, I won't use their last names, but these are people who are here to heal, and they're here to go forward and become professionals.
I saw a young lady who connected with the rabbi similarly, and what she was bringing up is the differences in the macro culture that the micro culture is living in, okay? And how for her that the day-to-day struggle is dealing with new friends that she's meeting that are not a part of her culture or heritage, and yet at the same time trying to hold on, you know, do something new, which is part of what, you know, that's the retraining. But then how do you manage those two things, you know, that kind of a thing? And do you get to see the same type of thing happening?
Yeah. I've been at Henry Ford Community College for 34 years, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what it's all about here, is we're watching people come from elsewhere, settle down, speaking one language at home, a different mm-hmm. language at the college, and there's the first generation who are basically residents and citizens of somewhere mm-hmm. else. Then their children.
Mm-hmm.
They're both residents and citizens of somewhere else where their parents have come from,
mm-hmm.
and the language they speak at home and the foods they eat at home mm-hmm. and the way they dress and mm-hmm. the way they're being raised. But at the same time, here they are, splitting their lives with everybody else in the macro culture.
Right, right,
America,
right, right. How would they, or did you hear the discussion about then this, excuse me, we was talking about the X, Y, and generations and stuff.
Yeah.
Are they the Y or the Z generation, and how do they take this, what they experienced, and take it back? You know, what do they do? How do you see that? Or have you experienced, have you heard someone go through that type of process where they have indoctrinated themselves to their original roots and home, and how has that been for them?
Well, that's a very beautiful question. It's a beautiful situation, actually, because I think what we have here is the third generation is now on deck.
Okay.
I mean, some of our people, like I mentioned, recent immigrants from Iraq, you would call them first or second generation.
Mm-hmm.
But we have the children of the second generation are growing up speaking English only, no accent. Yes, they do have religious roots, and they have cultural roots, and they honor those in most cases, many cases. But they are also fully assimilated into the American way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they are educated in public school system or private school system. They know about democracy. They know about opportunity. They know about freedom.
Mm-hmm.
They know about the tigers and the lions and hip hop. You know, they're popular cultural people.
Right.
And maintaining connectedness with their roots, that
mm-hmm.
kind of comes with the family, you know, the mother's milk.
Mm-hmm.
I think to a certain extent, I have so many students who...
That was what my rabbi was saying. She was saying the same thing, the mother's milk. Okay.
Yeah, we all have that. We got our genes and we got our memes, you know,
yes.
our cultural
yes,
attributes
right,
that we've inherited.
Right.
But we're all in the same boat. We're in the same mix, and that's
okay.
one of the things we're creating here.
One of the questions I brought up when I was talking to the three of you was that, you know, Dearborn has a diverse history, because back in the day, or back, you know, it has its history where there was the black-white assimilation, indoctrination, getting to know people. During the conference, there were those groups where, you know, were represented in the different workshops and stuff. I didn't get a chance to attend one of the workshops that had that, and what kinds of things did you get any feedback as to what came out of those, their sharing of how they compare, or did they see the distinction, or what was the distinction with that, as far as comparing the black and white struggle to the Iraqi-American struggle, to the Iraqi-Palestine struggle, you know.
Yes, yeah, beautiful. This is one of the most beautiful things of that conference. You know, you get everybody in the same room, mix them up. Dr. Jeannie O'Connor, the director of service learning, was largely responsible in helping us make this a service learning opportunity. So a number of our faculty...
Mm-hmm.
brought their students or invited their students to attend the conference
mm-hmm.
As a part of, you know, their course development,
right.
particularly in religious studies. Our,
right.
our religious studies department had well over 100 students
right.
at this conference.
Right.
And the Iraqi woman that I mentioned earlier, who is over here, she's on her own. Her mother's back in Baghdad. She's here all by herself, living
mm-hmm.
with a sister and a brother-in-law.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And doesn't know too many people. Is very just learned to speak English at our
mm-hmm.
English Language
mm-hmm.
Institute, and she became the hostess for Dr. Benjamin Baker, who's been working with us on our committee, and
oh,
he
yeah.
is the pastor of the Church of Abundant Life in Southfield, Michigan, and also a professor at the University of Michigan, Dearborn, sociology, and he's a professor at our college in religious studies.
All right.
So he teaches a course, African American Religious Experience and Expression.
Okay.
And he and this young Iraqi girl just got along beautifully. You know, she was taking care of him. She was his minder, you know, helping, making sure that his room was all set up and kind of signing the cross.
Right,
so that, that kind of interaction is bringing together all the different facets of our culture.
My impression would be that that would help them to everybody come out of their own personal mindset. In this, in a sense, it's a mirror, but in another way, it's a like a kaleidoscope. It gives you, you know, when you see someone that you think, you know, well, that's the same struggle we went through, but then when you look and listen to the, someone else's, it's different, or now I say different, yes, and distinct. That makes you then look at what you experience in another format. And I think that that was quite a bit of what Mr. Dubois was trying to bring out, is that I think when the rabbi was talking about the fact that we need to start to talk with each other and listen to each other, she said that's the key point, listen. And then Mr. Dubois said yes, and when you, after you listen, you will find out that you're wrong. He says, you're wrong, I'm wrong, we're all wrong. Because of we're locked into one little niche that does not take into the other person's shoes.
Right.
Okay. And I, you know, just listening to them talk, I had to come out of some of my little stereotypes.
It was very challenging. It was one of the messages he brought into his keynote was like, yes, he's going to be dealing with the other all the way up and down the line, and he's glad. Because it is by meeting with the other, people who are looking at the universe and the world from a completely different point of view than we are, that's what enables us to get out of our what do you call those, blinders.
Yes.
Get these blinders away so that we can become more complete human beings.
Right, right. What do you see as the next, or this conference was coming away from the conflict, in your, I guess you would say, your summary sessions or your debriefing types of things, what kinds of things did you, did you observe as far as that was the result of this last conference, and where do you see the conference going for its next step?
Well, that's an excellent question. I'm reading right now the papers I'm receiving from my students, and every paper I read, I'm experiencing pretty intense and immense satisfaction that what we set out to do has come to pass. These students are very grateful for the opportunity that this two-day conference afforded them to experience the America of our dreams.
Okay.
You know, we're all together every day in this institution, in the parking lots, in the classrooms, in the lunchrooms, but we frequently are with our own people. You know, and the only time we meet each other is, you know, tangentially or marginally.
Right.
So here, just the focus is on us. It's not on this group or that group. We're forced to be together. We're invited to be together, and that gives us a rather rare opportunity. So it's ongoing work. We've been we formed the college Council of World Cultures back in 1992.
Okay.
And I was in on that.
All right.
And in those days, what we said to the local press is what we are here building bridges of understanding.
All right.
And that's just happened to be the name of the conference.
Right,
that,
right.
You know, that's 22 years later. We're doing the same thing. So
right.
You don't build a bridge in a day.
Right.
This is ongoing work. It's ongoing challenge for all of us, faculty, staff, and students alike at this college to continue to build bridges of understanding. Now, whether we're going to be able to do another conference like this is still up in the air, because quite frankly, a bunch of people we sacrificed ourselves. You know, it took a lot of time and work to do this.
It was evident. Okay. What were some of the workshops that, could you mention some of the workshops that were a part of the conference as well?
Well, let's see. We had a couple of special conferences that were all about reconciliation, about teaching people how to deal with conflict resolution.
Mm-hmm.
We brought in Fred Pearson and his team from the Institute of Conflict Resolution at Wayne State University, and they gave a wonderful workshop on what are conflicts and what are the various pathways and strategies for resolving them.
Okay.
And brought
okay.
in a lot of former HFCC students, as a matter of fact,
all right.
who have gone through that program in conflict resolution and are now employed
mm-hmm.
in Wayne County and the surrounding neighborhoods
all right.
To help people deal with their conflicts. I mean, they're working with groups like, you know, people in probation in the criminal
right.
justice system.
Right. Right.
Know, it's not all just about punishments. It's
mm-hmm.
also about helping people to get back on their feet and get back into the game, so to speak,
right.
in
all
a
right.
productive way. So we did that. We did one on bullying, which was also
mm-hmm.
a workshop which talked about the problem of
mm-hmm.
bullying,
right.
particularly in the school system, but all the way up and down the line.
And I guess you could, it was finding out just how much Mr. Dubois impressed me. One of the things during the question and answer period came up about the drones,
mm-hmm.
all right? And there was a very, I won't say heated, but, invested discussion on both sides about that. And he gave his viewpoint. But a comment that he made at the end of that particular discussion was the fact he apologized for getting sidetracked.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And do you understand what he meant by that, and what would you, do you agree, disagree, or just how would you refer to that?
Yeah, I agree that he got sidetracked a little bit. It wasn't his fault. A couple people in the audience said, okay, you work for the Defense Department, what about drones? And obviously it's a very controversial new technology.
Mm-hmm.
I just heard on the radio the other day that their police forces across the country are now hoping to get their own drones so
right.
that they can have more effective surveillance
mm-hmm.
of the neighborhoods and whatnot. And then the other part of you is saying, well, Big Brother,
mm-hmm.
you know, we want somebody watching us all the time.
Okay.
What is the trade-off between so-called security and freedom?
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's one issue. The unintended consequences or so-called collateral damage that goes along with
mm-hmm.
using drones as weapons of war.
Mm-hmm.
We all know that they can be effective in taking out our enemies, but frequently in the process they also take out innocent bystanders,
right,
women
right.
and children,
right.
and that's not helping our image around the world. So
okay.
the issue that was brought up to Mr. Dubois
mm-hmm.
was, what do you think of drones? And
mm-hmm.
his answer was pretty clear. He said,
right.
if that's the only way you can take somebody out who's trying to kill you, I say we use them.
Okay. But how was that discussion taken away from the theme of building bridges?
Well, it came into, I would say, an operational question of strategies for persecuting a conflict, a war.
Okay.
Using drones as weapons.
Okay.
And that's an issue, okay, but it's really more of a policy issue rather than what we would call a philosophical or an issue that we have to deal with in our interpersonal relationships,
mm-hmm.
which is primarily what the building bridges is all about.
And I, you know, not to be, you know, beat the horse, but that's part of what happens when we do, that's why bridges don't get built, because we get into those issues.
Now don't sidetrack me here, Betty. No, but your point is exactly right. Yeah, if we get off and into these kind of questions, you know, let's have a special workshop next time on drones.
Yes.
Fair enough.
Mm-hmm.
Fair enough. But he's looking at the larger issue of how do we rehabilitate our enemies by creating friendships.
Right.
Make them into our allies.
And one of the things he said was that the common denominator is humanity.
Mm.
Not just the individual, a nation, but humanity as a whole, you know. And that includes all people, all that. That was what I picked up when he made that apology, is that when you pull yourself away from the whole picture, humanity, yes, you know, it's like my little bitty finger is very important,
yeah.
okay, but it's a part of my total being, you know.
Right.
And it's not really a part of my being, it's a part of my body, you know.
Yeah.
Don't let me get started, okay? But that was what I got out of it. What I liked about the conference was that it did give people the opportunity to deal with the finger, the toe, the nose, issues, mm-hmm. all right, which you with just back to what he was saying earlier, is that you have to hear the person from where they're coming from before they can hear you.
Right, the active listening component is yes. most important. And we tried to do that from the beginning to create a conference which would be highly interactive and mm-hmm. dialogical. We wanted it to be not people coming in and saying, this is the way it is. We wanted mm-hmm. people to come in and say, this is the issue. I'm a representative of that particular, you know, culture mm-hmm. or experience in America. Questions?
Mm-hmm.
And let's talk about it.
Okay.
And that's the way it was. It was a free form, free-flowing opportunity.
Another, as a person who is really not as versed as I could be, I won't say should be, but could be, the different distinctions, because even though we have a, would you say, Middle Eastern group here, they're very diverse within that group. You know, mm-hmm. There was a gentleman from Iraq, and so he was talking to another gentleman who was from, he wasn't Iraq, I might say Baghdad or whatever, and they were having a struggle, and then they said, they stopped, and they said, well, look, we are here, and we can't, you know, we're having a struggle. So, and part of what they were grateful for was the fact that they recognized that they were locked into trying to get an understanding of who and where they came from, but they weren't hearing each other.
Ah.
Okay?
Yeah.
And then they said, like, they had to stop and take a deep breath. You know, and they both paused because they were getting very intense. And they were struggling, trying to get along and having a struggle with that core of trying to get along and trying to help the other understand and not step on each other's toes.
Beautiful.
And, it, you know, to me, that was a very poignant moment, you know, watching them go. And then all of a sudden, they both just kind of like, the eyes were getting stern, and their face were getting front, and then both of them kind of like caught it at the same time.
Wonderful.
You
that's
know.
That's the deal. You know, we call it the building bridges of understanding, and mm-hmm. it's designed to be an oasis.
Well, yes.
In fact, we talked earlier, and you know, we've been working on this for a whole year.
Mm-hmm.
We thought, how are we going to get people to come into there? And like a person comes in from an African American community, mm-hmm. and they're used to being around mostly African Americans, mm-hmm. and they walk in and go, what am I doing here?
Yes,
you know?
Yes, and a white is not always white.
Exactly. So what we were thinking of giving everybody a flower when they came in the door, but we gave everybody a memo, mm-hmm. you know, a brooch, you know, mm-hmm. what do you call that, the program,
mm-hmm.
and we tried to set a tone of the conference. The overall theme of the conference is let's come together here. This is not a place to come and argue with each other. It's
right.
a place to listen. It's all about listening.
Right, right. And the feedback, no.
Yeah.
I see that you hear me, but are you listening?
Yeah.
And that's the distinction.
Yeah.
That was what this participant says. You know what? We're not hearing each other. You know,
yeah.
I listen to your words, but I'm not hearing you. And then the guy, he said, no. And they were, like I said, they were both of, they weren't Jewish, they weren't Christian. But they were two just distinctive things,
mm-hmm.
and so there was, and that was part of the problem, is that there's an assumption that just because you come from a west of or east of the United States that you're all the same,
right?
And it's not the case,
right? Active listening takes it to a different level, doesn't it?
And one thing